Savor it. The prisoner was sopping on the floor of the dungeon cell, his fear and pain and memories leaking from him. The demon prince inhaled them as though they were opium. Delicious. It was. He hated himself, cursed himself. But the despair coming from the man as his worst memories ripped him to shreds. It was intoxicating. It was strength. It was life. He had nothing and no one anyway. If he got the chance, he would find a way to end it. For now, this was eternity. This was birth and death and rebirth. So he drank the man's pain, his fear, his sorrow, and he learned to like it. Chapter 54. Manon stared at the letter that the trembling messenger had just delivered. Alid was trying her best to look as though she wasn't observing every flick of Manon's eyes across the page, but it was hard not to stare when the witch snarled with every word she read. Alid lay on her pallet of hay, the fire already dying down to embers, and groaned as she sat up, her sore body aching. She'd found a water skein in the larder, and had even asked the cook if she could take it for the wingleader. He didn't dare object, or begrudge her the two little bags of nuts she had also nabbed for the wingleader. Better than nothing. She'd stored it all under her pallet, and Manon hadn't noticed. Any day now, the wagon would be arriving with supplies. When it left, Alid would be on it, and never have to deal with any of this darkness again. Alid reached for the pile of logs and added two to the fire, sending sparks shooting up in a wave. She was about to lie down again when Manon said from the desk, "In 3 days, I'll be heading out with my 13. "To where?" Alid dared ask. From the violence with which the wingleader had read the letter, it couldn't be anywhere pleasant. "To a forest in the north, to..." Manon caught herself and moved across the floor, her steps light but powerful, as she came to the hearth and chucked the letter in. "I'll be gone for at least 2 days. If I were you, I'd suggest using that time to lie low." Alid's stomach twisted at the thought of what exactly it might mean for the wingleader's protection to be thousands of miles away. But there was no point in telling Manon that. She wouldn't care, even if she'd claimed Alid as one of her kind. It meant nothing, anyway. She wasn't a witch. She'd be escaping soon. She doubted anyone here would really think twice about her disappearance.
"I'll lie low," Alid said.
Perhaps in the back of a wagon, as it made its way out of Morath and to freedom beyond. It took 3 whole days to prepare for the meeting. The matron's letter had contained no mention of the breeding and slaughter of witches. In fact, it was as if her grandmother hadn't received any of Manon's messages. As soon as Manon got back from this little mission, she'd start questioning the keep's messengers. Slowly, painfully. The 13 were to fly to coordinates in Otterlin, smack in the middle of the kingdom, just inside the tangle of oak-walled forest, and arrive a day before the arranged meeting to establish a safe perimeter. For the king of Otterlin was to at last see the weapon her grandmother had been building, and apparently wanted to inspect Manon as well. He was bringing his son, though Manon doubted it was for guarding his back in the way that the heirs protected their matrons. She didn't particularly care about any of it. A stupid, useless meeting, she'd almost wanted to tell her grandmother. A waste of her time. At least seeing the king would provide an opportunity to meet the man who was sending out these orders to destroy witches and make monstrosities of their witchlings. At least she would be able to tell her grandmother in person about it. Maybe even witness the matron make mincemeat of the king once she learned the truth about what he'd done. Manon climbed into the saddle, and Abraxos walked out onto the post, adjusting to the latest armor the aerial blacksmith had crafted. Finally light enough for the wyverns to manage, and now to be tested on this trip. Wind bit at her, but she ignored it, just as she'd ignored her 13. Asterin wouldn't speak to her, and none of them had spoken about the Volg prince that the Duke had sent to them. It had been a test, to see who would survive, and to remind her what was at stake. Just as unleashing Shadowfire on that tribe had been a test. She still couldn't pick a coven, and she wouldn't, until she'd spoken to her grandmother. But she doubted that the Duke would wait much longer. Manon gazed into the plunge, at the ever-growing army sweeping across the mountains and valleys like a carpet of darkness and fire. So many more soldiers hidden beneath it. Her shadows had reported that very morning about spotting lean, winged creatures with twisted human forms soaring through the night skies. Too swift and agile to track, before they vanished into the heavy clouds and did not return. The majority of Morath's horrors, Manon suspected, had yet to be revealed. She wondered if she'd command them, too. She felt the eyes of her 13 on her, waiting for the signal. Manon dug her heels into Abraxos's side, and they free-fell into the air. The scar on her arm ached. It always ached, more than the collar, more than the cold, more than the Duke's hands on her, more than anything that had been done to her. Only the Shadowfire was a comfort. She had once believed that she'd been born to be queen. She had since learned that she'd been born to be a wolf. The Duke had even put a collar on her like a dog, and had shoved a demon prince inside her. She'd let it win, for a time, curling up so tightly inside herself that the prince forgot she was there. And she waited. In that cocoon of darkness she bided her time, letting him think her gone, letting them do what they wanted to the mortal shell around her. It was in that cocoon where the Shadowfire began to flicker, fueling her, feeding her. Long ago, when she was small and clean, flames of gold had crackled at her fingers, secret and hidden. Then they had vanished, as all good things had vanished. And now they had returned, reborn within that dark shell as phantom fire. The prince inside her did not notice when she began to nibble at him. Bit by bit, she stole morsels of the otherworldly creature that had taken her body for its skin, who did such despicable things with it. The creature noticed the day she took a bigger bite, big enough that it screamed in agony. Before it could tell anyone, she leaped upon it, tearing and ripping with her shadow fire until only ashes of malice remained, until it was no more than a whisper of thought. Fire. It did not like fire of any kind. For weeks now she had been here, waiting again, learning about the flame in her veins, how it bled into the thing in her arm and reemerged as shadow fire. The thing spoke to her sometimes, in languages she had never heard, that had maybe never existed. The collar remained around her neck, and she let them order her around, let them touch her, hurt her. Soon enough she would find true purpose, and then she would howl her wrath at the moon. She'd forgotten the name she'd been given, but it made no difference. She had only one name now. Death, Devourer of Worlds. Chapter 55. Aelin fully believed in ghosts. She just didn't think they usually came out during the day. Rowan's hand clamped onto her shoulder right before sunrise. She took one look at his tight face and braced herself.
Someone's broken into the warehouse.
Rowan was out of the room, armed and fully ready to shed blood before Aelin could grab her own weapons.
Gods above. He moved like the wind, too.
She could still feel his canines at her throat, rasping against her skin, pressing down lightly. On near-silent feet, she went after him, finding him and Adian standing before the apartment door, blades in hand, their muscled, scarred backs rigid. The windows. They were their best options for escape if it was an ambush. She reached the two males just as Rowan eased open the door to reveal the gloom of the stairwell. Collapsed in a heap, Evangeline was sobbing on the stair landing, her scarred face deathly pale, and those citrine eyes wide with terror as she peered up at Rowan and Adian. Hundreds of pounds of lethal muscle and bared teeth. Aelin shoved past them, taking the stairs by twos and threes until she reached the girl. She was clean, not a scratch on her. "Are you hurt?" She shook her head, her red gold hair catching the light of the candle that Rowan brought down. The staircase shuddered with every step he and Adian took.
"Tell me,"
Aelin panted, silently praying it wasn't as bad as it seemed. "Tell me everything."
"They took her. They took her. They took her."
"Who?" Aelin said, brushing back the girl's hair, wondering whether she would panic if she held her.
"The king's men,"
Evangeline whispered.
"They came with a letter from Aerobin. Said it was in Aerobin's will that they be told about Lysandra's bloodline.
Aelin's heart stopped dead. Worse. Far worse than what she'd braced for.
"They said she was a shapeshifter. They took her, and they were going to take me too, but she fought them, and she made me run, and Clarice wouldn't help."
"Where did they take her?" Evangeline sobbed.
"I don't know. Lysandra said I was to come here if anything ever happened. She told me to tell you to run."
She couldn't breathe, couldn't think. Rowan knelt down beside them and slid his arms around the girl, scooping her up, his hand so big that it nearly enveloped the entire back of her head. Evangeline buried her face in his tattooed chest, and Rowan murmured wordless sounds of comfort. He met Aelin's eyes over the girl's head.
"We need to be out of this house in 10 minutes, until we figure out if he betrayed you, too."
As if he'd heard it, Adian edged past them, going to the warehouse window that Evangeline had somehow slipped in through. Lysandra, it seemed, had taught her charge a few things. Aelin scrubbed at her face and raised a hand on Rowan's shoulder as she stood, his skin warm and soft beneath her calloused fingers.
"Nezrin's father. We'll ask him to look after her today."
Aerobin had done this. A final card up his sleeve. He'd known. About Lysandra. About their friendship. He didn't like to share his belongings. Kaol and Nezrin burst into the warehouse a level below, and Adian was halfway to them before they even realized he was there. They had more news. One of Ren's men had contacted them moments ago. A meeting was to take place tomorrow in Oakwald, between the king, Dorian, and the wing leader of his aerial cavalry, with a delivery of one new prisoner headed for Morath.
"You have to get her out of the tunnels,"
Aelin said to Kaol and Nezrin, as she stormed down the stairs.
"Right now. You're human. They won't notice you at first. You're the only ones who can go into that darkness."
Kaol and Nezrin exchanged glances. Aelin stalked up to them.
"You have to get her out right now."
For a heartbeat, she wasn't in the warehouse. For a heartbeat, she was standing in a beautiful bedroom before a bloody bed and the wrecked body splayed upon it. Kaol held out his hands.
"We're better off spending the time setting up an ambush."
The sound of his voice. The scar on his face was stark in the dim light. Aelin clenched her fingers into a fist. Her nails, the nails that had shredded his face, digging in.
"They could be feeding on her,"
she managed to say. Behind her, Evangeline let out a sob. If they made Lysandra endure what Aelin had endured when she fought the Volg Prince.
"Please,"
Aelin said, her voice breaking on the word. Kaol noticed then, where her eyes had focused on his face. He paled, his mouth opening. But Nezrin reached for her hand, her slim, tan fingers cool against Aelin's clammy palms.
"We will get her back. We will save her. Together."
Kaol just held Aelin's gaze, his shoulders squaring as he said,
"Never again."
She wanted to believe him.
Chapter 56. A few hours later, seated on the floor of a ramshackle inn on the opposite side of Rifthold, Aelin peered at a map they'd marked with the meeting's location spot, about half a mile from the Temple of Temis. The tiny temple was just inside the cover of Oakwald,
perched atop a towering slice of rock in the middle of a deep ravine. It was accessible only via two dangling footbridges attached to either side of the ravine, which had spared it from invading armies over the years. The surrounding forest would likely be empty, and if wyverns were flying in, they would no doubt arrive under cover of darkness the night before. Tonight. Aelin, Rowan, Adian, Nezrin, and Kaol sat around the map, sharpening and polishing their blades as they talked over their plan. They'd given Evangeline to Nezrin's father, along with more letters for Terrasen and the Bane, and the baker hadn't asked any questions. He'd only kissed his youngest daughter on the cheek and announced that he and Evangeline would bake special pies for their return. If they returned.
What if she has a collar or a ring on?
Kaol asked from across their little circle.
Then she loses a head or a finger, Adian said baldly.
Aelin shot him a look.
You don't make that call without me.
And Dorian? Adian asked.
Kaol was staring at the map as if he would burn a hole through it.
Not my call, Aelin said tightly.
Kaol's eyes flashed to hers.
You don't touch him.
It was a terrible risk, to bring them all within range of a Volg prince, but...
We paint ourselves in word marks, Aelin said. All of us. To ward against the prince.
In the 10 minutes it had taken them to grab their weapons, clothes, and supplies from the warehouse apartment, she'd remembered to get her books on word marks, which now sat on the little table before the sole window in the room. They'd rented 3 for the night. One for Aelin and Rowan, one for Adian, and the other for Kaol and Nezrin. The gold coin she'd slapped onto the innkeeper's counter had been enough to pay for at least a month. And his silence.
Do we take out the king? Adian said.
We don't engage,
Rowan replied.
Until we know for sure we can kill the king and neutralize the prince with minimal risk. Getting Lysandra out of that wagon comes first.
Agreed, Aelin said.
Adian's gaze settled on Rowan.
When do we leave?
Aelin wondered at his yielding to the Fey Prince.
I don't want those wyverns or witches sniffing us out, Rowan said,
the commander bracing for the battlefield.
We arrive just before the meeting takes place. Long enough to find advantageous spots and to locate their scouts and sentries. The witch's sense of smell is too keen to risk discovery. We move in fast.
She couldn't decide whether or not she was relieved. The clock chimed noon. Nezrin rose to her feet.
I'll order lunch.
Kaol got up, stretching.
I'll help you bring it up.
Indeed, in a place like this. They would get no kitchen-to-room service. Though in a place like this, Aelin supposed, Kaol might very well be going to keep an eye on Felix's back.
Good.
Once they left, Aelin picked up one of Nezrin's blades and began polishing it. A decent dagger, but not great. If they lived past tomorrow, maybe she would buy her a better one as a thank you.
Too bad Lorkin's a psychotic bastard, she said. We could use him tomorrow.
Rowan's mouth tightened.
What will he do when he finds out about Adian's heritage?
Adian set down the dagger he'd been honing.
Will he even care?
Halfway through polishing a short sword, Rowan paused.
Lorkin might not give a shit. Or he might find Adian intriguing. But he would more likely be interested in how Adian's existence can be used against Gavriel.
She eyed her cousin, his golden hair now seeming more proof of his ties to Gavriel than to her.
Do you want to meet him?
Perhaps she'd brought this up only to keep from thinking about tomorrow.
A shrug.
I'd be curious, but I'm not in any rush. Not unless he's going to drag his cadre over here to help with the fighting.
Such a pragmatist.
She faced Rowan, who was back at work on the sword.
Would they ever be convinced to help, despite what Lorkin said?
They had provided aid once, during the attack on Mistward.
Unlikely,
Rowan said, not looking up from the blade.
Unless Maeve decides that sending you succor is the next move in whatever game she's playing. Maybe she'll want to ally with you to kill Lorkin for his betrayal.
He mused.
Some of the Fae who used to dwell here might still be alive and in hiding. Perhaps they could be trained, or already have training.
I wouldn't count on it, Adian said. The little folk I've seen and felt in Oakwald.
But the Fae, not a whisper of them there.
He didn't meet Rowan's eyes, and instead started cleaning Kaol's final unsharpened blade.
The king wiped them out too thoroughly.
I would bet any survivors are stuck in their animal forms. Aelin's body became heavy with a familiar grief.
We'll figure all that out later.
If they lived long enough to do so.
For the rest of the day, and well into the evening, Rowan planned their course of action with the same efficiency she'd come to expect and cherish. But it didn't feel comforting now. Not when the danger was so great. And everything could change in a matter of minutes. Not when Lysandra might already be beyond saving.
You should be sleeping,
Rowan said, his deep voice rumbling across the bed and along her skin.
The bed's lumpy, Aelin said. I hate cheap inns.
His low laugh echoed in the near dark of the room. She'd rigged the door and window to alert them to any intruder, but with the ruckus coming from the seedy tavern downstairs, they would have a hard time hearing anyone in the hall, especially when some of the rooms were rented by the hour.
We'll get her back, Aelin.
The bed was much smaller than hers, small enough that her shoulder brushed his as she turned over. She found him already facing her, his eyes gleaming in the dark.
I can't bury another friend.
You won't.
If anything ever happened to you, Rowan...
Don't,
he breathed.
Don't even say it. We dealt with that enough the other night.
He lifted a hand, hesitated, then brushed back a strand of hair that had fallen across her face. His calloused fingers scraped against her cheekbone, then caressed the shell of her ear. It was foolish to even start down this road, when every other man she'd let in had left some wound in one way or another, accidentally or not. There was nothing soft or tender on his face, only a predator's glittering gaze.
When we get back,
he said,
remind me to prove you wrong about every thought that just went through your head.
She lifted an eyebrow.
Oh?
He gave her a sly smile that made thinking impossible. Exactly what he wanted, to distract her from the horrors of tomorrow.
I'll even let you decide how I tell you. With words.
His eyes flicked once to her mouth.
Or with my teeth and tongue.
A thrill went through her blood, pooling in her core. Not fair. Not fair at all to tease her like that.
This miserable inn is rather loud, she said,
daring to slide a hand over his bare pectoral, then up to his shoulder. She marveled at the strength beneath her palm. He shuddered, but his hands remained at his sides, clenched and white-knuckled.
It's too bad Adian could still probably hear through the wall.
She gently scraped her nails across his collarbone, marking him, claiming him, before leaning in to press her mouth to the hollow of his throat. His skin was so smooth, so invitingly warm.
Aelin, he groaned.
Her toes curled at the roughness in his voice.
Too bad,
she murmured against his neck. He growled, and she chuckled quietly as she rolled back over and closed her eyes, her breathing easier than it had been moments before. She'd get through tomorrow, regardless of what happened. She wasn't alone. Not with him, and not with Adian also beside her. She was smiling when the mattress shifted. Steady footsteps padded toward the dresser, and the sounds of splashing filled the room, as Rowan dunked the pitcher of cold water over himself. Chapter 57
I can smell them all right, Adian said,
his whisper barely audible as they crept through the underbrush, each of them clothed in green and brown to remain concealed in the dense forest. He and Rowan walked several paces ahead of Aelin, arrows loosely knocked in their bows as they picked out the way with their keen hearing and smell. If she had her damn fae form, she could be helping, instead of lingering behind with Kaol and Nezrin, but...
Not a useful thought, she told herself. She would make do with what she had. Kaol knew the forest best, having come hunting this way with Dorian countless times. He'd laid out a path for them the night before, but had yielded leading to the two Fey warriors and their impeccable senses. His steps were unfaltering on the leaves and moss beneath their boots, his face drawn but steady, focused. Good. They passed through the trees of Oakwald so silently that the birds didn't stop their chirping. Brannan's forest. Her forest. She wondered if its denizens knew what blood flowed in her veins, and hid their little party from the horrors waiting ahead. She wondered if they'd somehow help Lysandra when it came time. Rowan paused 10 feet ahead and pointed to 3 towering oaks. She halted, her ears straining as she scanned the forest. Growls and roars of beasts that sounded far too large rumbled toward them, along with the scrape of leathery wings on stone. Bracing herself, she hurried to where Rowan and Adian were waiting by the oak trees, her cousin pointing skyward to indicate their next movement. Aelin took the center tree, hardly disturbing a leaf or twig as she climbed. Rowan waited until she'd reached a high branch before coming up after her. In about the same amount of time she had done it, she noted a bit smugly. Adian took the tree to the right, with Kaol and Nezrin scaling the left. They all kept climbing, as smoothly as snakes, until the foliage blocked their view of the ground below, and they could see into a little meadow up ahead. Holy gods. The wyverns were enormous. Enormous, vicious, and those were indeed saddles on their backs.
Poisoned barbs on the tail,
Rowan mouthed in her ear.
With that wingspan, they can probably fly hundreds of miles a day.
He would know, she supposed. Only 13 wyverns were grounded in the meadow. The smallest of them was sprawled on his belly, face buried in a mound of wildflowers. Iron spikes gleamed on his tail in lieu of bone. Scars covered his body like a cat's stripes. And his wings. She knew the material grafted there. Spider silk. That much of it must have cost a fortune. The other wyverns were all normal, and all capable of ripping a man in half in one bite. They would be dead within moments against one of these things, but an army 3,000 strong? Panic pushed in. I am Aelin Ashriver Galathinius.
That one. I bet she's the wing leader,
Rowan said, pointing now to the women gathered at the edge of the meadow. Not women. Witches. They were all young and beautiful, with hair and skin of every shade and color. But even from the distance, she picked out the one Rowan had pointed to. Her hair was like living moonlight, her eyes like burnished gold. She was the most beautiful person Aelin had ever seen, and the most horrifying. She moved with a swagger that Aelin supposed only an immortal could achieve, her red cloak snapping behind her, the riding leathers clinging to her lithe body. A living weapon. That's what the wing leader was. The wingleader prowled through the camp, inspecting the wyverns and giving orders Aelin's human ears couldn't hear. The other 12 witches seemed to track her every movement, as if she were the axis of their world, and 2 of them followed behind her especially closely. Lieutenants. Aelin fought to keep her balance on the wide bough. Any army that Terrasen might raise would be annihilated, along with the friends around her. They were all so, so dead. Rowan put a hand on her waist, as if he could hear the refrain pounding through her with every heartbeat.
You took down one of their matrons,
he said in her ear, barely more than a rustling leaf.
You can take down her inferiors.
Maybe. Maybe not, given the way the 13 witches in the clearing moved and interacted. They were a tight-knit, brutal unit. They did not look like the sort that took prisoners. If they did, they likely ate them. Would they fly Lysandra to Morath once the prison wagon arrived? If so, Lysandra doesn't get within 30 feet of the wyverns. If she got hauled onto one of them, then it would already be too late.
Agreed,
Rowan murmured.
Horses approaching from the north, and more wings from the west. Let's go.
The matron, then. The horses would be the king and the prison wagon. And Dorian. Adian looked ready to start ripping out witch throats as they reached the ground, and slunk through the forest again, heading for the clearing. Nezrin had an arrow knocked in her bow as she slipped into the brush to provide cover. Her face grave, ready for anything. At least that made one of them. Aelin fell into step beside Kaol.
No matter what you see or hear, do not move. We need to assess Dorian before we act. Just one of those Volg princes is lethal.
I know,
he said, refusing to meet her stare.
You can trust me.
I need you to make sure Lysandra gets out. You know this forest better than any of us. Get her somewhere safe.
Kaol nodded.
I promise.
She didn't doubt it. Not after this winter. She reached out, paused, and then put a hand on his shoulder.
I won't touch Dorian, she said. I swear it.
His bronze eyes flickered.
Thank you.
They kept moving. Adian and Rowan had them all doubling back to the area they'd scouted earlier. A little outcropping of boulders with enough brush for them to crouch unseen and observe everything that was happening in the clearing. Slowly, like lovely wraiths from a hell realm, the witches appeared. The white-haired witch strode to greet an older black-haired female who could only be the matron of the Blackbeak clan. Behind the matron, a cluster of witches hauled a large covered wagon, much like the one the Yellowlegs had once parked before the Glass Palace. The wyverns must have carried it between them. It looked ordinary, painted black and blue and yellow, but Aelin had a feeling that she didn't want to know what was inside. Then the royal party arrived. She didn't know where to look. At the King of Otterlin? At the small, too familiar prison wagon in the center of the riders? Or at Dorian, riding at his father's side, that black collar around his neck, and nothing human in his face. Chapter 58 Manon Blackbeak hated this forest. The trees were unnaturally close, so close that they'd had to leave the wyverns behind in order to make their way to the clearing, a half mile from the crumbling temple. At least the humans hadn't been stupid enough to pick the temple itself as a meeting site. It was too precariously perched, the ravine too open to spying eyes. Yesterday, Manon and the 13 had scouted all the clearings within a mile radius, weighing them for their visibility, accessibility, and cover, and finally settled on this one, near enough to where the king had originally demanded they meet, but a far more protected spot. Rule one of dealing with mortals, never let them pick the exact location. First, her grandmother and her escort coven strode through the trees from wherever they'd landed, a covered wagon in tow, no doubt carrying the weapon she'd created. She assessed Manon with a slashing glance and merely said, "Keep silent and out of our way. Speak only when spoken to. Don't cause trouble, or I'll rip out your throat." Later, then. She would talk to her grandmother about the Volg later. The king was late, and his party made enough god's damned noise as they traipsed through the woods that Manon heard them a good 5 minutes before the king's massive black war horse appeared around the bend in the path. The other riders flowed behind him like a dark shadow. The scent of the Volg slithered along her body. They brought a prison wagon with them, containing a prisoner to be transferred to Morath. Female, from the smell of her, and strange. She'd never come across that scent before. Not Volg, not Fey, not entirely human. Interesting. But the 13 were warriors, not couriers. Her hands behind her back, Manon waited as her grandmother glided toward the king, monitoring his human Volg entourage while they surveyed the clearing. The man closest to the king didn't bother glancing around. His sapphire eyes went right to Manon and stayed there. He would have been beautiful, were it not for the dark collar around his throat and the utter coldness in his perfect face. He smiled at Manon as though he knew the taste of her blood. She stifled the urge to bare her teeth and shifted her focus to the matron, who had now stopped before the mortal king. Such a reek from these people. How was her grandmother not grimacing as she stood before them? "Your Majesty," her grandmother said, her black robes like liquid night as she gave the slightest of bobs. Manon shut down the bark of protest in her throat. Never, never had her grandmother bowed or curtsied or so much as nodded for another ruler. Not even the other matrons. Manon shoved the outrage down deep as the king dismounted in one powerful movement. "High witch," he said, angling his head in not quite a bow, but enough to show some kernel of acknowledgement. A massive sword hung at his side. His clothes were dark and rich. And his face, cruelty incarnate. Not the cold, cunning cruelty that Manon had honed and delighted in, but base, brute cruelty. The kind that sent all those men to break into her cottages, thinking her in need of a lesson. This was the man to whom they were to bow, to whom her grandmother had lowered her head a fraction of an inch. Her grandmother gestured behind her with an iron-tipped hand, and Manon lifted her chin. "I present to you my granddaughter, Manon, heir of the Blackbeak clan and wingleader of your aerial cavalry." Manon stepped forward, enduring the raking gaze of the king. The dark-haired young man who had ridden at his side dismounted with fluid grace, still smirking at her. She ignored him.
"You do your people a great service, wingleader,"
the king said, his voice like granite. Manon just stared at him, keenly aware of the matron judging her every move.
"Aren't you going to say anything?"
the king demanded, his thick brows, one scarred, high. "I was told to keep my mouth shut," Manon said. Her grandmother's eyes flashed. "Unless you'd prefer I get on my knees and grovel." Oh, there would certainly be hell to pay for that remark. Her grandmother turned to the king. "She's an arrogant thing, but you'll find no deadlier warrior." But the king was smiling, though it didn't reach his dark eyes.
"I don't think you've ever groveled for anything in your life, wingleader."
Manon gave him a half-smile in return, her iron teeth out. Let his young companion wet himself at the sight. "We witches aren't born to grovel before humans." The king chuckled mirthlessly and faced her grandmother, whose iron-tipped fingers had curved as if she were imagining them around Manon's throat.
"You chose our wingleader well, matron,"
he said, and then gestured to the wagon painted with the iron teeth banner.
"Let us see what you've brought for me. I hope it will be equally impressive and worth the wait."
Her grandmother grinned, revealing iron teeth that had begun to rust in some spots, and ice licked up Manon's spine. "This way." Shoulders back, head high, Manon waited at the bottom of the wagon steps to follow the matron and the king inside. But the man, so much taller and wider than she up close, frowned at the sight of her.
"My son can entertain the wingleader."
And that was it. She was shut out, as he and her grandmother vanished within. Apparently she wasn't to see this weapon, at least not as one of the first, wingleader or not. Manon took a breath and checked her temper. Half of the 13 encircled the wagon for the matron's safety, while the others dispersed to monitor the royal party around them. Knowing their place, their inadequacy in the face of the 13... The escort coven faded back into the tree line. Black uniformed guards watched them all. Some armed with spears, some with crossbows, some with vicious swords. The prince was now leaning against a gnarled oak. Noticing her attention, he gave her a lazy grin. It was enough. King's son or not, she didn't give a damn. Manon crossed the clearing, Sorrel behind her. On edge, but keeping her distance. There was no one in earshot as Manon stepped a few feet away from the crown prince. "Hello, princeling," she purred. The world kept slipping out from underneath Kaol's feet, so much so that he grabbed a handful of dirt just to remember where he was, and that this was real. not some nightmare. Dorian. His friend. Unharmed, but not Dorian. Not even close to Dorian, as the prince smirked at that beautiful white-haired witch. The face was the same, but the soul gazing out of those sapphire eyes had not been created in this world. Kaol squeezed the dirt harder. He had run. He had run from Dorian and let this happen. It hadn't been hope that he carried when he fled, but stupidity. Aelin had been right. It would be a mercy to kill him. With the king and matron occupied, Kaol glanced toward the wagon and then at Aelin, lying on her stomach in the brush, a dagger out. She gave him a quick nod, her mouth a tight line. Now, if they were going to make their move to free Lysandra, it would have to be now. And for Nehemia, for the friend vanished beneath a wordstone collar, he would not falter. The ancient cruel demon squatting inside him began thrashing as the white-haired witch sauntered up to him. It had been content to sneer from afar. "One of us. One of ours," it hissed to him. "We made it, so we'll take it." Every step closer made her unbound hair shimmer like moonlight on water. But the demon began scrambling away as the sun lit up her eyes. "Not too close," it said. "Don't let the witchling too close. The eyes of the Volg kings." "Hello, princeling," she said, her voice bedroom soft and full of glorious death. "Hello, witchling," he said. And the words were his own. For a moment he was so stunned that he blinked. He blinked. The demon inside of him recoiled, clawing at the walls of his mind. "Eyes of the Volg kings, eyes of our masters," it shrieked. "Do not touch that one." "Is there a reason you're smiling at me?" she said. "Or shall I interpret it as a death wish?"
"Do not speak to it."
He didn't care. Let this be another dream, another nightmare. Let this new lovely monster devour him whole. He had nothing beyond the here and now.
"Do I need a reason to smile at a beautiful woman?"
"I'm not a woman." Her iron nails glinted as she crossed her arms. "And you," she sniffed. "Man or demon?"
"Prince," he said. That's what the thing inside him was.
He had never learned its name.
"Do not speak to it."
He cocked his head. "I've never been with a witch." Let her rip out his throat for that. End it. A row of iron fangs snapped down over her teeth as her smile grew. "I've been with plenty of men. You're all the same. Taste the same." She looked him over as if he were her next meal.
"I dare you,"
he managed to say. Her eyes narrowed, the gold like living embers. He'd never seen anyone so beautiful. This witch had been crafted from the darkness between the stars.
"I think not, prince," she said in her midnight voice.
She sniffed again, her nose crinkling slightly.
"But would you bleed red or black?" "I'll bleed whatever color you tell me to."
"Step away. Get away."
The demon prince inside him yanked so hard he took a step. But not away, toward the white-haired witch. She let out a low, vicious laugh.
"What is your name, prince?"
His name. He didn't know what that was. She reached out, her iron nails glimmering in the dappled sunlight. The demon's screaming was so loud in his head that he wondered if his ears would bleed. Iron clinked against stone as she grazed the collar around his neck. Higher. If she just slashed higher.
"Like a dog," she murmured, "leashed to your master."
She ran a finger along the curve of the collar, and he shuddered, in fear, in pleasure, in anticipation of the nails tearing into his throat.
"What is your name?"
A command, not a question, as eyes of pure gold met his.
"Dorian,"
he breathed.
Your name is nothing. Your name is mine,
the demon hissed. And a wave of that human woman's screaming swept him away. Crouched in the brush just 20 feet from the prison wagon, Aelin froze.
Dorian.
It couldn't have been. There wasn't a chance of it. Not when the voice that Dorian had spoken with was so empty, so hollow, but... Beside her, Kael's eyes were wide. Had he heard the slight shift? The wingleader cocked her head, her iron-tipped hand still touching the wordstone collar.
Do you want me to kill you, Dorian?
Aelin's blood went cold. Kael tensed, his hand going to his sword. Aelin gripped the back of his tunic in silent reminder. She had no doubt that across the clearing, Nezrin's arrow was already pointed with lethal accuracy at the wingleader's throat.
I want you to do lots of things to me,
the prince said, raking his eyes along the witch's body. The humanity was gone again. She'd imagined it. The way the king had acted. That was a man who held pure control over his son, confident that there was no struggle inside. A soft, joyless laugh. And then the wingleader released Dorian's collar. Her red cloak flowed around her on a phantom wind as she stepped back. Come find me again, prince, and we'll see about that. A Volg prince inhabited Dorian, but Aelin's nose did not bleed in its presence, and there was no creeping fog of darkness. Had the king muted its power so his son could deceive the world around him? Or was that battle still being waged inside the prince's mind? Now. They had to move now, while the matron and the king remained in that painted wagon. Rowan cupped his hands to his mouth, and signaled with a bird's call so lifelike that none of the guards shifted. But across the clearing, Adian and Nezrin heard, and understood. She didn't know how they managed to accomplish it, but a minute later the wyverns of the High Witch's coven were roaring with alarm, the trees shuddering with the sound. Every guard and sentinel turned toward the racket, away from the prison wagon. It was all the distraction Aelin needed. She'd spent 2 weeks in one of those wagons. She knew the bars of the little window, knew the hinges and the locks. And Rowan, fortunately, knew exactly how to dispatch the 3 guards stationed at the back door without making a sound. She didn't dare breathe too loudly as she climbed the few steps to the back of the wagon, pulled out her lock-picking kit, and set to work. One look over here, one shift of the wind. There, the lock sprang open, and she eased back the door, bracing for squeaky hinges. By some god's mercy it made no sound, and the wyverns went on bellowing. Lysandra was curled against the far corner, bloody and dirty, her short nightgown torn and her bare legs bruised. No collar, no ring on either hand. Aelin bit back her cry of relief and flicked her fingers to tell the courtesan to hurry. On near silent feet, Lysandra hurtled past her, right into the speckled brown and green cloak Rowan was holding out. 2 heartbeats later, she was down the steps and into the brush. Another beat, and the dead guards were inside the wagon with the door locked. Aelin and Rowan slipped back into the forest amid the roars of the wyverns. Lysandra was shivering where she knelt in the thicket. Kael before her, inspecting her wounds. He mouthed to Aelin that she was fine, and helped the courtesan rise to her feet before hauling her deeper into the woods. It had taken less than 2 minutes, and thank the gods. Because a moment later the painted wagon's door was flung open, and the matron and king stormed out to see what the noise was about. A few paces from Aelin, Rowan monitored every step, every breath their enemy took. There was a flash of movement beside her, and then Adian and Nezrin were there, dirty and panting, but alive. The grin on Adian's face faltered as he peered back at the clearing behind them. The king stalked to the heart of the clearing, demanding answers.
Butchering bastard.
And for a moment, they were again in Terrasen, at that dinner table in her family's castle, where the king had eaten her family's food, drunk their finest wine, and then he'd tried to shatter her mind. Adian's eyes met hers, his body trembling with restraint, waiting for her order. She knew she might live to regret it, but Aelin shook her head. Not here. Not now. There were too many variables, and too many players on the board. They had Lysandra. It was time to go. The king told his son to get onto his horse, and barked orders to the others as the wingleader backed away from the prince, with a casual, lethal grace. The matron waded across the clearing, her voluminous black robes billowing despite her stillness. Aelin prayed that she and her companions would never run into the matron, at least not without an army behind them. Whatever the king had seen inside the painted wagon had been important enough that they hadn't risked letters about its specific details. Dorian mounted his horse, his face cold and empty.
"I'll come back for you,"
she'd promised him. She had not thought it would be in this way. The king's party departed with eerie silence and efficiency, seemingly unaware that they were now missing three of their own. The stench of the Vogue faded as they vanished, cleared away by a brisk wind, as if Oakwald itself wanted to wipe away any trace. Headed in the opposite direction, the witches prowled into the trees, lugging the wagon behind them with inhuman strength, until only the wingleader and her horrifying grandmother remained in the clearing. The blow happened so fast that Aelin couldn't detect it. Even Adian flinched. The smack reverberated through the forest, and the wingleader's face snapped to the side to reveal four lines of blue blood now running down her cheek.
"Insolent fool,"
the matron hissed, lingering near the trees. The beautiful golden-haired lieutenant observed every movement the matron made, so intensely that Aelin wondered if she would go for the matron's throat.
"Do you wish to cost me everything?"
"Grandmother, I sent you letters."
"I received your whining, sniveling letters, and I burned them."
"You are under orders to obey."
"Did you think my silence was not intentional? Do as the Duke says."
"How can you allow these..."
Another strike. Four more lines bleeding down the witch's face.
"You dare question me? Do you think yourself as good as a high witch now that you're wingleader?"
"No, matron."
There was no sign of that cocky, taunting tone of minutes before. Only cool, lethal rage. A killer by birth and training. But the golden eyes turned toward the painted wagon. A silent question. The matron leaned in, her rusted iron teeth within shredding distance of her granddaughter's throat.
"Ask it, Manon. Ask what's inside that wagon."
The golden-haired witch by the trees was ramrod straight. But the wingleader, Manon, bowed her head.
"You'll tell me when it's necessary."
"Go look. Let's see if it meets my granddaughter's standards."
With that, the matron strode into the trees, the second coven of witches now waiting for her. Manon Blackbeak didn't wipe away the blue blood sliding down her face as she walked up the steps of the wagon, pausing on the landing for only a heartbeat before entering the gloom beyond. It was as good a sign as any to get the hell out. With Adian and Nezrin guarding their backs, Aelin and Rowan hurried for the spot where Kaol and Lysandra would be waiting. Not without magic would she take on the king and Dorian. She didn't have a death wish, either for herself or her friends. She found Lysandra standing with a hand braced against a tree, wide-eyed, breathing hard. Kaol was gone. Chapter 59. The demon seized control the moment the man who wielded the collar returned. It shoved him back into that pit of memory until he was the one screaming again. Until he was small and broken and fragmented. But those golden eyes lingered. "Come find me again, Prince." A promise. A promise of death. Of release. "Come find me again." The words soon faded, swallowed up by screaming and blood, and the demon's cold fingers running over his mind. But the eyes lingered, and that name. Manon. Manon.
Kaol couldn't let the king take Dorian back to the castle. He might never get this chance again. He had to do it now. Had to kill him. Kaol hurtled through the brush as quietly as he could, sword out, bracing himself. A dagger through the eye, a dagger, and then... talking from ahead, along with the rustling of leaves and wood. Kaol neared the party, beginning to pray, beginning to beg for forgiveness for what he was about to do, and for how he had run. He'd kill the king later. Let that kill be his last. But this would be the kill that broke him. He drew his dagger, cocking his arm. Dorian had been directly behind the king. One throw to knock the prince off the horse, then a sweep of his sword, and it could be over. Aelin and the others could deal with the aftermath. He'd already be dead. Kaol broke through the trees into a field, the dagger a burning weight in his hand. It was not the king's party that stood there in the tall grass and sunlight. 13 witches and their wyverns turned to him and smiled. Aelin ran through the trees as Rowan tracked Kaol by scent alone. If he got them killed, if he got them hurt. They'd left Nezrin to guard Lysandra, ordering them to head for the forest across the nearby temple ravine to wait under an outcropping of stones. Before herding Lysandra between the trees, Nezrin had tightly grabbed Aelin's arm and said, "Bring him back." Aelin had only nodded before bolting. Rowan was a streak of lightning through the trees, so much faster than her when she was stuck in this body. Adian sprinted close behind him. She ran as quickly as she could, but... the path veered away, and Kaol had taken the wrong fork. Where the hell had Kaol even been going? She could scarcely draw breath fast enough. Then light flooded in through a break in the trees, the other side of the wide meadow. Rowan and Adian stood a few feet into the swaying grass, their swords out, but downcast. She saw why a heartbeat later. Not 30 feet from them, Kaol's lip bled down his chin as the white-haired witch held him against her, iron nails digging into his throat. The prison wagon was open beyond them to reveal the 3 dead soldiers inside. The 12 witches behind the wingleader were all grinning with anticipatory delight as they took in Rowan and Adian, then her. "What's this?" the wingleader said, a killing light in her golden eyes. "Spies? Rescuers? Where did you take our prisoner?" Kaol struggled, and she dug her nails in farther. He stiffened. A trickle of blood leaked down his neck and onto his tunic. "Oh, gods, think. Think, think, think." The wingleader shifted those burnt gold eyes to Rowan. "Your kind," the wingleader mused. "I have not seen for a time."
"Let the man go," Rowan said.
Manon's smile revealed a row of flesh-shredding iron teeth, far, far too close to Kaol's neck. "I don't take orders from fey bastards."
"Let him go," Rowan said too softly. "Or it will be the last mistake you make, wingleader."
In the field behind them, the wyverns were stirring, their tails lashing, wings shifting. The white-haired witch peered at Kaol, whose breathing had turned ragged. "The king is not too far down the road. Perhaps I should hand you over to him." The cuts on her cheeks, scabbed in blue, were like brutal war paint. "He'll be furious to learn you stole his prisoner from me. Maybe you'll appease him, boy." Aelin and Rowan shared all of one look before she stepped up to his side, drawing Goldrin. "If you want a prize to give to the king," Aelin said, "then take me."
"Don't,"
Kaol gasped out. The witch and all 12 of her sentinels now fixed their immortal, deadly attention on Aelin. Aelin dropped Goldrin into the grass and lifted her hands. Adian snarled in warning.
"Why should I bother?" the wingleader said. "Perhaps we'll take you all to the king."
Adian's sword lifted slightly.
"You can try."
Aelin carefully approached the witch, her hands still up. "You enter into a fight with us?"
and you and your companions will die.
The wing leader looked her up and down.
Who are you?
An order, not a question. Aelin Galathinius. Surprise, and perhaps something else, something Aelin couldn't identify, sparked in the wing leader.